Chapter 16. Hope for the Future.
The whole Evrémonde family must be destroyed, Madame Defarge said to the woodcutter near the prison. I care nothing for the wife and child or the doctor, but my husband is weak and I can't trust him. He doesn't have my reason for wishing to destroy them, and I don't have his reason for pitying the doctor. If I don't act at once, he could warn them and they might escape. Remember, you are a witness that she made signs to the prisoners, she continued. And you saw her father and child with her too.
Yes, I know what I saw, said the woodcutter.
And you'll be at the guillotine at 3 o'clock today?
Of course.
I'll also be there. But first, I must go to the wife. She'll be at home, waiting for the moment of her husband's death.
With that, Madame Defarge hurried away. She did not care that a man was going to die for the wrongs of his relatives. His wife and child were her enemies too. They had no right to live. Since she was a girl, she had learned to hate. Now she was a tiger without pity. Hidden under her coat was a gun, and there was a knife in her belt. Mr. Lorry had been extremely anxious that there would not be room for Miss Pross and Jerry Cruncher in their carriage. So he had hired a second carriage for them that would leave at 3 o'clock. Being much smaller and lighter, this carriage would be able to travel very quickly. While Madame Defarge hurried towards the Manette's house, Miss Pross was preparing to leave. A short while earlier, she and Jerry had watched the first carriage set off. She had seen her brother, Solomon, bring the man in Sydney Carton's clothes, and she immediately knew who it really was. Once the carriage had left, she persuaded Jerry to go and check that their own carriage would not be late. Jerry agreed, leaving Miss Pross alone. She went upstairs to the empty rooms and nervously checked her watch. It was 2:20. As she stood washing her face with cold water, she could not help looking round to check that no one was there. The second time she turned, she screamed. Someone was standing in the room.
Where is Evrémonde's wife?
Madame Defarge said coldly. Miss Pross quickly shut the door of Lucy's room and stood with her back to it.
I'll tell you nothing, she said. I know that you mean evil.
Each woman spoke her own language, and neither understood the other.
There's no point her hiding, Madame Defarge said. Go and tell her that I wish to see her. Do you hear me? I'm an Englishwoman and I won't be beaten by you, said Miss Pross.
Madame Defarge grew impatient.
Citizen doctor, she called out. Wife of Evrémonde, answer me.
The house was very quiet. Suddenly, Madame Defarge realised they must be gone. She searched the rest of the house and found empty rooms. She quickly returned to Miss Pross, who had not moved from her place in front of Lucy's door.
As long as you don't know whether they're in that room, you don't know what to do, said Miss Pross. I'll kill you! Nothing can stop me opening that door, said Madame Defarge, running forward.
Miss Pross caught her and held her tight. Madame Defarge fought back, striking at her face. But Miss Pross used all her strength to hold on to Madame Defarge, who was trying to reach her belt.
The knife is under my arm, said Miss Pross. You can't reach it. I'm stronger than you.
Suddenly, Madame Defarge's hands were inside her coat. Miss Pross looked up, saw the gun, and struck out at it. There was a terrible noise, and she was blinded by smoke. It happened in a second, and then everything was silent. As the smoke cleared, Miss Pross saw the lifeless body on the ground. She stepped away from it as quickly as she could, put on her coat, and picked up her bag. Then she went out of the house, locked the door behind her, and ran into the courtyard. Jerry was shocked to see her wild hair and the marks on her face.
"Why are the streets so quiet?" she asked him.
"There's the usual noise," he replied, surprised.
"I can't hear you," she said.
Jerry did not understand.
"You can hear the terrible death carts rolling along the streets now," he said.
But Miss Pross could hear nothing, and she heard nothing again for the rest of her life. Beyond the courtyard, a few streets away, 6 death carts carry the 52 prisoners to the guillotine. A crowd stands by the roadside watching with interest and without pity. Some of the prisoners in the carts look back. Some sit with their heads down. Guards ride by the side of the carts, and sometimes a voice in the crowd shouts out to them,
"Which one is Evrémonde?"
The guards either side of the 3rd cart point to a man standing at the back, talking to a girl who is holding his hand. The man shows no interest in anything around him and looks only at the girl. As the clocks strike 3, the carts turn towards the guillotine. In front of it, women are seated in rows of chairs, busily knitting.
"Where is Thérèse Defarge?"
cries a woman.
"Who has seen her?"
"Evrémonde will be here in a moment, and she's not here to see it," says another.
The prisoners are taken down from the carts. The guillotine is ready. The blade drops, and a head is held up. The women knitting look up and count.
1.
Evrémonde gets down from the cart, and the girl is lifted out after him. He turns her back to the guillotine, which is always rising and falling. She looks into his face and thanks him.
"If it weren't for you, dear stranger, I would not be so calm. I would not be able to raise my thoughts to heaven," she says. "I think you were sent to me by heaven."
"Or you to me," says Carton. "Keep your eyes on me, dear child, and look at nothing else."
"I'm all right while I hold your hand. I'll be all right when I have to let it go, if they're quick."
"They will be quick." They stand among the others, but speak as if they were alone.
"Brave and kind friend, may I ask you one last question?" she says. "I have a cousin I love very dearly. Like me, she is alone and poor. But if the Republic really does good for the poor, and one day they suffer less, she may live to be old."
"What's your question, dear sister?"
"Will it seem like a long time to me while I wait for her in heaven?"
"No, my child. There is no time in heaven, and no trouble."
"You comfort me so much. I know so little. Should I kiss you now? Has the moment come?"
"Yes."
She kisses his lips. He kisses hers. They quietly bless each other. She goes before him. She is gone. The women count.
22.
He is next. The whispering crowd moves forward to sea like a great wave of water, and he is gone. 23. That night, it was said that his face was the most peaceful face ever seen there. Many imagined that it held a picture of the future, and if his thoughts could be spoken, he would have said this. Before the time of the guillotine ends, I see the new oppressors destroyed by it, Barsad, Defarge, the judges and the juries. I see the evil of this age, created by the evil of the past, gradually coming to an end. I see a beautiful city and a great people rising from the darkness. I see that the lives in England for which I gave my own life are peaceful, useful, and happy. I see Lucy with a son who has my name. I see her father, old, but at peace. I see Lucy and her husband side by side to the end. I see that I have a place in their hearts and in the hearts of their children and grandchildren. I see the child who has my name grow up to be a good man. He brings his boy here to this place to tell him my story. It is a far, far better thing that I do than I have ever done. It is a far, far better rest that I go to than I have ever known. Penguin Readers, A Tale of Two Cities, Charles Dickens, Level 6, retold by Kate Williams, illustrated by Hablet Knight Brown. Series editor Sorrel Pitts. Read by Nigel Pilkington. Copyright Penguin Books Limited, 2023.